Well, it'd be great if you could keep your Bibles open to those passages, keep your fingers stuck in somewhere so you can get back to them. Now, if we go on to the next slide, if that's all right. I wonder if you've ever wanted a message that is so clear as to what you ought to do, a message in the sky that everybody can see and that you know exactly what you're meant to do in your life. And there should be a slide coming up with a picture on this somewhere. There is. It's a very clear message, something I wish it was written in the stars. I wish I just knew what I had to do. If only we knew, as the Lord's people, what we are to do in 2018. If only we could know what Street Baptist Church is to do in 2018. We got a little bit stuck at times in 2017, I think it's fair to say. And wouldn't it be great if we just knew everything that was going to happen and what the Lord really wanted us to do? It'd be great. Well, he has told us. Matthew 28, verse 18. And Jesus came and said to them, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations." He has told us what we are to do. Now, in view of the fact that Jesus, who at this point had risen from the dead, he has cancelled sin, he proved who he really was, that he was the Son of God, and that this man, Jesus, has all authority over every circumstance, whatever you're facing. So your life, the life of this church, the affairs of your workplace, your health, your family, this country, the world, Donald Trump, the whole universe. In view of the fact that Jesus has all authority, he is able to command us what to do. And here is no optional extra, but it's compulsory. All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me, says Jesus. So therefore, go and make disciples of all nations. This is the command. This is what you and I must do in 2018. Go and make disciples of all nations. That's why you're here. That's why you haven't been translated to glory yet, and why Jesus hasn't yet returned, because he has something for you and for me to still be doing here on earth. And he is calling this church, you and me, to be a supernatural community of disciple-making disciples in 2018. That's what he's calling us to. So if you wonder what's God wanting me to do this year, what's God wanting for Street Baptist Church this year? Let's take our eyes above what some of those things we might think he might want us to do. I don't know if you saw that slide first up when you came in. What do you think we should be doing in Street Baptist Church this year? Maybe we should be looking for another pastor. Maybe we should be... Lift your eyes up. Let's see what God really wants for us this year. Many of those other things, yes. Maybe. That's what we need to pursue as well. But look, what does he want us to be? He wants us to be a supernatural community of disciple-making disciples. That is his call to you and me, wherever he's placed us in this year and every year, actually, and every day. And we're going to explore this tonight. It's going to be slightly different to the usual way that I would sort of expound a passage in. We're going to ask two key questions, and we're going to go through three passages. And we've read two of them already. So the first question we're going to ask is, what is a disciple? And the second question is, what are the hallmarks of discipling? So first question, what is a disciple? Don't need to turn to it, but just look at the verses up there. Because this clearly shows us what a disciple of Jesus is. Jesus is just starting his ministry. He's got a load of people around him, and he says to them, according to this verse, "Follow me, and I will make you become fishers of men." And immediately they left their nets and followed him. So you see here, Jesus has been teaching, and then he challenges these people around him, these fishermen particularly, and says, "Follow me." And the response to them is really quite staggering. I don't want you to sort of pick up how amazing this is. Immediately they left their nets, everything that they lived for, and they followed him. So that's what they did. You see, a disciple of Jesus is someone simply who follows Jesus. There's lots of other things you could say around it, but actually the simplest form, they follow Jesus. They want to please him. They want to live for him. He's their goal, their aim. These disciples are called by Jesus. They're uneducated people. They're described in Acts 4 as common men. I don't know if you're a common man or woman today. And elsewhere, we read of Jesus calling other kinds of people. Tax collectors, sinners, prostitutes, lawyers, businessmen, landowners. And it's not what they were doing or how they were defined, but what they do now which defines them. Someone in this church told me recently this. I think this is quite interesting. The potential of a new convert is far greater than the problems of their history. I think it's quite profound. We've got someone now missed who's got profound words. Let me read it again. The potential of a new convert is far greater than the problems of their history. Don't we get bogged down with history? Jesus chooses all sorts to follow him. He's no respecter of background, of class, of gender, of struggles, of perceived success or perceived failure. But when he calls, you know who his disciples are. Why? Because they follow. They follow. And as they choose to submit in humility and learn from their master, because you see, they must be teachable. It's really important. If we're to follow someone, we must be teachable. That means we can't be proud. We must be humble. Just like Mary. Do you remember her? A few weeks ago, we spoke about her. She sits at the feet of Jesus and she listens because she knows she has to follow this guy. She has to listen to him. He's got something important to say to me. I must be humble and teachable. And the disciple, however, is not the finished article. The disciple is someone who is not what they will be. Spotless. We just sung that, didn't we? We will be spotless. We're not now, are we? They're not what they ought to be, but they're not what they were. They're changed people. That's what a disciple is, a follower of Jesus. Think about Peter the fisherman. He had some successes, didn't he? What was he? Jesus' inner circle. Jesus had 12 disciples, and he had 3 in his inner circle. Peter was one of them. He saw Jesus transfigured. He saw him changed into glory on a mountain. And he was one of the first to see the risen Christ. And he brought the gospel to the non-Jews, the Gentiles. But then later in life, when he was much older, Paul still had to tell him off because he compromised the gospel at one point. Jesus doesn't choose people to be his disciples because they're perfect. He chooses his disciples that through their weaknesses he is magnified. He treats them with grace rather than his judgment. And they therefore love him. They want to follow him. They want to be his disciples. Brothers and sisters, that's you. That's you. If you're a follower of Jesus, you haven't got it all right. But you want to go where he's taking you. You want to listen to him. We've heard his teaching. We've seen who he is. We have left everything, or maybe not everything, I don't know. Probably not. But we have everything to follow him. And he called you and me, not because of who you are or I am, but because of who he is. And he doesn't stick with us because we are now perfect, but because he is magnified in our weakness and he has set his love on us. And this is why we want to follow him. So in 2018, be a disciple. Be a disciple. We must learn what it is to follow him. We must learn what it is to leave everything, just as these 12 guys did. We must learn what it is to sit under his word and learn from him and let him fill our lives in every part. But look at Matthew 28, verse 18, if you've still got your fingers in that passage. Because we now come to the part where we see what else we are to do now. What are we to do? Go and make disciples of all nations. So that is the call. That is the call to all of us. We are to be disciples who disciples. And let me say something really quite radical here. You cannot be a disciple unless you disciple. You cannot be a disciple unless you disciple. Because Jesus is commanding his disciples to go and disciple, to go and make disciples. So if we say, well, Jesus, I will follow you, but actually I'm not listening to your words. Well, how can we be a disciple? So a disciple must be a disciple maker. And as a church, we should be outstanding in this area because this is our mission. This is what we are to do. In 2018, this is what we are to do. Disciple of Jesus, your call this year is to go and make disciples. This means that you, a disciple, which means a follower of Jesus, and I are to go and disciple other people. What does it mean to disciple? Well, it means to help others to follow Jesus. That's what it is. It's as simple as that. So in everything, we're to be disciple-making disciples to all nations. That means all people. The gospel, you see, is for everyone. Everyone. There's no one out there who does not need to hear about Jesus. So what does it really involve? Well, look, we've not got very long. I've only got a few sheets of paper left, so don't worry. It's a massive topic, isn't it? But helping others to follow Jesus includes evangelism. Those people, for the first time, who've never heard about Jesus, they need to be told about him. So helping others to follow Jesus for the first time is evangelism. And until they come to know Jesus, until they become a disciple themselves. But it also is encouraging believers to follow Jesus better. That's discipleship, as we'd often call it in the church. Well, there's no Bible word for it. We can't cover everything today, but we're going to focus on this latter. So the second big area of looking at then, what are the characteristics of discipleship? We're going to look at two examples. And we're going to answer it in four different separate subpoints. So the first thing is this. Discipleship is based on acceptance. I'm going to read Acts chapter 9, verses 26 to 27. Don't feel you have to turn to it. You can if you really want to. Saul, as he's known at that point, has just had this blinding light that shone at him, and he suddenly realized he's been persecuting Jesus' church. It says this in verse 26 of chapter 9 of Acts. When he, that's Saul, came to Jerusalem, he tried to join the disciples, but they were all afraid of him, not believing that he really was a disciple. But Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles. He told them how Saul on his journey had seen the Lord and that the Lord had spoken to him. And then moving on to verse 31, then the church throughout Judea, Galilee and Samaria enjoyed a time of peace. It was strengthened and encouraged by the Holy Spirit. It grew in numbers, living in fear of the Lord. I love Barnabas. He doesn't appear very much in the Bible. That's not his real name. You probably know, well, some of you might know that as well. They changed his name because it means son of encouragement. And they thought this guy was so encouraging. He's the kind of guy you'd want to meet in church. And they thought he was so encouraging, they changed his name to Barnabas. They loved him. But you can imagine why. In Acts chapter 9, verse 26, the apostles were scared of Saul. You can imagine why. In verse 1 of chapter 9, it says that Saul was going around breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. Can you imagine this guy coming into church? A guy who a few weeks ago was killing Christians. Can you imagine that? Ah, but he says he's changed. Oh, come on. Give him a bit of time first. Let's see if he really has changed. Let's find out whether it's all a trick, whether it's a trap. He's not ready for this group. We can't accept him here yet. But something has changed. And they don't see it. But Barnabas does see it. And without compromising truth, Barnabas accepts Paul. You see, a disciple-making disciple accepts all sorts of people who want to follow Jesus, even religious murderers like Saul. It's not about what people were, but it's about what they are now. And do they want to follow Jesus? Because if they do, they're a disciple of Jesus potentially here. Now imagine if Jesus had waited for the 12 disciples to become acceptable socially before he called them, to lead and to establish his early church. Can you imagine that if he'd left it? What would have happened to his ministry on earth and the preparation for his departure and the church when he did depart? Jesus didn't wait. He accepted where they were. Their motive was to get up and follow. Now, he knew that they would publicly let him down. Jesus did call for change, but he accepted where people were and brought them on from there. And Jesus puts his hand on different things of different people's lives at different times. But he works in his way and his timing. It's not always acceptable to us, but actually it's acceptable to him. And this is what Barnabas does here with Saul. He sees what Saul could be. And he sees the change that has happened in Saul's life. He sees that he wants to follow Jesus. So what does he do? He makes him a disciple. Or he disciples him. Thank God that he did place Barnabas there. Can you imagine what would have happened if Barnabas had not taken Paul under his wing? A disciple-making disciple accepts their brother and sister in Christ, not because behaviour is acceptable to them, but because they have been accepted by Christ. A disciple-making disciple accepts their brother and sister in Christ, not because behaviour is acceptable to them, or to you, or to me, but because they have been accepted by Christ, and they now want to follow him. We may not like some of the sins that people carry with them, and you might not like some of the sins that I carry with me. But as we accept them without compromise, the Lord will work in his way, in his time. But do they want to follow Jesus? I want to help them do that. Don't you? Think of Zacchaeus. There he is in his tree, isn't he? This dodgy guy, stealing from people. Tax collector. The Lord called him. Zacchaeus responded, and then he was changed. But the Lord works in that way. So often we want people to change before we'll accept people. But that's not how the Lord works. It doesn't work like that. So maybe we need to reset our buttons and start again. So there must be acceptance that every disciple will make mistakes, get things wrong, stumble along at times. And isn't that true for every disciple? Isn't that true for you and me? We get it wrong, don't we? People are accepted not because of our standards, but because of God's standards. And that's the standard we have to get to. This is the liberating gospel. And when this happens, God's Spirit is clearly at work for all to see. See, and so just in Acts, the reason I fast-forwarded to 31, you can read the verses in between as well if you want to. But actually what it's really getting at is Paul then starts to be used in the church, and suddenly God's Spirit is really at work in that place. And I do think there's a link there. The reason that they were seeing such fruit was because they realized that a disciple is someone who wants to follow Jesus and that we accept them as they come. And when they start to be used for God, God really works. God's Spirit is at work. So because the gospel was working its way out in real lives, it was evidence of it in that community. There was life. And where there is life, there is growth. There is always growth. We're growing old. You're alive. We're all growing older, aren't we? You see a baby, it's growing. A tree, it's growing, it's alive. And where the church is alive, it will grow. It will grow. And we will see spiritual growth and depth happening. And almost always, through church history, we do see it numerically as well. That's not what we aim at. We want to get the gospel out to as many as possible. We want to see people turning to Jesus and following him. We're not talking about numbers, but inevitably, if we're going to get out there with the gospel, people will come to faith and numbers will grow. But this does also require relationships. So that's where our Acts 18 passage comes in, isn't it? So if you could just turn to that again. Sorry for these passages, that there's quite a few in here. Now, meanwhile, a Jew named Apollos, a native of Alexandria, came to Ephesus. He was a learned man with a thorough knowledge of the scriptures. He'd been instructed in the way of the Lord, and he spoke with great fervor and taught about Jesus accurately, though he knew only the baptism of John. He began to speak boldly in the synagogue. When Priscilla and Aquila heard him, this probably a married couple, they invited him to their home and explained to him the way of God more adequately. When Apollos wanted to go to Achaia, the brothers and sisters encouraged him and wrote to the disciples there to welcome him. When he arrived, he was a great help to those who by grace had believed, for he vigorously refuted his Jewish opponents in public debate, proving from the scriptures that Jesus was the Messiah. Do you see what happens? Someone disciples him, and then he goes and makes disciples. That's always the principle. So we've got a great example here of what Priscilla and Aquila did with Apollos when they realized that he didn't quite have the full gospel. We don't quite know what he was talking about, but it seems like he had a real grasp of the Old Testament, but just didn't know all the details of Jesus. So verse 26, do you see what they did for him? Verse 26, when they heard him, they invited him to their home and explained to him the way of God more adequately. Discipleship is based on relationship. You see, if we are to disciple others, if we're to help others to follow Jesus, we can't just tell them what they must do. We're pretty good at that, or I am. But we need to get to know them. You know, brothers and sisters, we need to get to know each other if we want to help each other to grow in Jesus and follow him better. We need to know them, and uncomfortably, they need to know us. So we need to be relational. It's all based on relationship. It's openness and transparency. You know, I can't expect someone to grow if I'm covering up a load of things in my life. I need to be open with them. And that's what we need to be as a church. We need to be open with each other. And you see one of the fruits of openness, what happens here. Priscilla and Aquila are great at having people around their house. That's what they took Apollos. Did you notice that? They offered hospitality. Now, I wonder if this is true of us, because it really ought to be. Okay, hospitality, very quickly. 1 Peter 4, verse 9 commands us to show hospitality to each other without grumbling. Well, I'm not sure how good we are at that. But if you have a roof over your head, whether you own it or not, doesn't matter, it's a gift from God. And what does God give us gifts? So we might be disciples who make disciples. That's why he's given you your house. Use it. Use it to make disciples. That's why you've got your house. And it's not just to be for people who are like you. You know, that's the supernatural thing, that when God breaks into lives, society out there is very good getting around each other. So we have people who are like-minded. They might join up and they might have a coffee around their bridge class or something. I don't know what it might be. But actually, as Christians, there's something different. The thing that unites us is not our age, our gender, our backgrounds, our social interactions, it's Jesus. Okay, so it doesn't matter. In fact, a real testimony of the gospel that is really working out in our lives and we're doing discipling properly is when we get people of all sorts to our houses. There we are. So there was life. Sorry, I've gone back. So disciple-making is not finding those who are like you and inviting them into your house and to share your life. Disciple-making, you know, cuts across culture. It brings, therefore, across all sorts of people together who want to help each other follow Jesus. That's the aim. And I guess the question is, did that characterize you and me as a follower of Jesus in 2017? And this is what Street Baptist Church must look like in 2018. That's what we must be doing. We can't form deep relationships with the whole church, of course. So you could easily argue that one's, well, that's just not practical, John. You can't do that. Well, no, you can't. Maybe three or four people maximum. You can get to know really well and be accountable with and share pretty much everything with. Maybe up to 12 to an area, you know, a bit like Jesus did with his disciples. It's a pretty good principle there. But we must be relational towards each other. It's a mindset, just like Priscilla and Aquila. If we're to help others to follow Jesus better, and if they are to help us follow Jesus better, because we want to follow Jesus better, don't we? Third thing, there's four these little sub-points. Discipleship is based on intention. Did you notice that? Verse 26, look what happened when Priscilla and Aquila heard Apollos speaking. They thought, there's a bit of a problem here. We need to get alongside him. We need to do something about it. Now, I wonder how you came to faith. Your story of how you became a follower of Jesus. How did it happen? And what about when you became a Christian? How did you grow in Christ? How do you grow as a Christian? Chances are someone was doing something. I can't think of a testimony I've heard of where someone wasn't doing something or someone wasn't intentionally praying for someone and then they came to faith and then they were shown something by someone. Someone came alongside them, they prayed for them. It's intentional. It doesn't just happen. And you're glad they did it, aren't you, to you? You're glad they prayed for you, glad they got alongside you. And that is what is required to us, of us, of each person sat here tonight. If you're a follower of Jesus, this is what's required, that intentionally you're going to go out and you're going to think, I need to be a disciple maker. I need to be equipped for this. First of all, I need to pray. I need to get praying for the person or the people. It doesn't just happen by chance. You don't just stumble over disciples. You've got to go out there. You've got to help them to be disciples. And you also. So if I want to follow Jesus this year, then I need others to help me. I need you. If I want others to follow Jesus this year, then I need to help them. I need to help you. You need to help the person next to you. You need to help the people in this church if you want to see them grow as Christians. If you want to see them develop as followers of Jesus. This is really serious stuff. I need to intentionally be drawing alongside people so that I can help them to follow Jesus better. You know, this could be done in my home group. That's a really good place to start. And I think a lot of the work in this area does probably and will continue and evolve from in our home groups. It's really important. Home groups are vital. And I'd really encourage you, we need to be in our home groups. This is where the main centre of discipling is going to be happening. And as I help them, they will help me to follow Jesus better. You see, it's disciples making disciples again. How do you decide to get alongside? And who should get alongside you? Well, think of your home group first. That's a really good place to start. If you're not sure who it could be, well, ask your home group leader. Who could come alongside me? How do I start this? What do I do here? Who can I come alongside? Because it's not just about me asking people to help me. I want to help other people. The most important criteria for being a discipler is that the person who is a discipler wants others to follow Jesus. That's it. That's their intention. Not that they're the most cool person. If you get alongside them, it'd be really great if I sat in church next to that. Oh, he looks so cool. I look really good. It's not about that. It's just about, do they want to help others follow Jesus? You know, it's not about being able. It's about being available. That's what we need to be. I don't need to know every single answer and every single passage in the Bible. I just need to be available to do this. Not about ability. Otherwise, a lot of us will be ruled out of this. This is for all disciples. But if we're going to disciple each other, there's a really important glue to keep it together. We must be the example. Matt was talking about it this morning. It's a common theme at the moment coming up, isn't it? Discipleship is based on example. It's exemplary. Now, I don't know whether many of you have been to primary school recently. I guess there's some of you, teachers. So, our children come home sometimes. They say, oh, it's a show and tell day. Have you heard of these show and tells? Yeah? So you have to take something into school that's going to be particularly impressive. And then because you've shown it to the other children, you now have an opportunity to talk about it. You know, it's the same with the gospel. If you want to help others to follow Jesus, you need to demonstrate it first. Now, Jesus is coming to the end of his physical time on earth in Matthew chapter 28. And he has done all of these things that he's now telling the disciples to do. His words hold together because he is led by example. In Matthew 5, Jesus says this, "So let your light so shine before men that they might see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." If we are to help others follow Jesus, we must not hinder them in any way by the way that we live our lives. But we must be living examples. We must model Christ. It does not mean we're perfect. We've said that already. But our every intention is that we follow Jesus and that we'll keep putting to death those sins that we struggle with. We must model him. think of practical implications of this. You know, we expect in this year of 2018 to be appointing new leaders as a church. So before you ask anything yourself and say, wow, what an amazing preacher, or whatever it might be, you know, that is not the most important criteria for selecting any leader. Does this person model their life on Jesus? Are they a disciple-making disciple that I can look up to and say, wow, that's someone I want to follow because they're following Jesus? Are they teachable? Are they humble? Are they accepting? Are they not compromising? Are they good teachers? Are they hospitable? Are they looking to follow Jesus and intentionally looking to help others to follow Jesus? Are they a disciple-making disciple? That is what I want to look for in my leaders. Isn't that for you? By the way, hold us to account as well. You've done that quite well this last year. And that's good. And we would encourage you to do that. Look, we need to be people who are accountable to one another. And our leaders must be exemplary. It's not just for elders. All leaders of ministry, because a lot of people here aren't elders, but are leaders of all sorts of ministries. And this is for you too. But you know what? This is the person who claims to follow Jesus. Every believer. Every Christian. Disciple-making disciples must be the pattern for the whole church. So as you sit here tonight, you think, okay, first question, am I a follower of Jesus? I'm a follower of Jesus. Am I a disciple-making disciple? Do I want others to follow Jesus? Am I helping them to do that in the way that I live, in the way that I speak, in the way that I meet with them, in the way that I'm hospitable to them? Am I doing all that? We must be like that. So the whole church, this should characterize the whole church, not just the elders. We should stand there and we should be exemplary in this. I absolutely accept that. But the whole church should be like this. Every ministry of the church should be focused on this. It must be evident in our main meetings. It must be obvious in our home groups. Really important. As each one in our home groups must aspire to be full. Our home groups must aspire to be full of disciple-making disciples. And each ministry of the church should be measured against this yardstick. How is this work helping us to be disciple-making disciples? Because if it's not doing that, do we need to stop that ministry? Or do we need to just refocus that ministry? Every single ministry of the church, if we're going to be different to the community out there, every single thing, the yardstick, disciple-making disciples. And to all of us as members, and anyone who's not a member here, and I would encourage you, by the way, if you haven't thought about it, to consider membership. Anyone who's attached to the church, but particularly to us as members, who is a believer, the command from the Lord for 2018 is the same as it always has been. And you know, when we look back at the end of 2018, if we get there, how will we measure whether this church has had a successful year as we serve the Lord? What will it be? Will it be that we're in the new building, or that we've got another pastor, or that we've grown our numbers by whatever? I would say it's this. Jesus has given us a very clear message, and it's by that that we measure whether God has really worked or not. Have we become a community of disciple-making disciples? Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations. 2018, what are we going to do? That's what you've got to do. Disciple. Be a disciple maker.